From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 17 years ago, President Bush had a spiritual awakening. He found God, gave up drink, and embraced Christian faith. That embrace endeared him to millions of fundamentalist voters across this country. Now, with the war drums beating, the president's faith and religious rhetoric are taking on extra fire and brimstone. God is not neutral, he has told the nation and the world. He invokes religious language and imagery to support policy at home and abroad. American presidents are no strangers to religion, and this president is not the first born-again head of state here. Jimmy Carter claims that spot. But there is also a tradition of secular space around the presidency. In leaving that behind in some degree, George Bush's language sometimes edges eerily close to that of the Middle Eastern evil ones he condemns. But with God guiding the president, who can argue? Tonight on Point, God, war, and the president. What do you think? Is there too much God in the White House, or not enough? For God to win, must America make war on evil? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now is Melissa Rogers, Executive Director of the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life. She joins us from Falls Church, Virginia. Good evening and welcome, Melissa Rogers.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. Melissa Rogers, help us put this president and his, of late, increasingly religious rhetoric in some kind of context. We are all accustomed to American presidents saying, and God bless the United States of America. But is George Bush taking us into new, or at least in recent times, new territory with the volume and degree of religiosity in his public statements?
Well, you're quite right to know that American presidents have used religious imagery. In fact, one only needs to glance, for example, at the inauguration speeches of Presidents Washington through Clinton to see this. Mm-hmm. And it seems, from looking at some of these speeches and from the general sense, that Americans seem to feel fairly comfortable with presidents, for example, asking for God's guidance for themselves and for the country, particularly at inauguration time, describing widely held values in religious terms. And sometimes, certainly in the past, generally affirming the idea that God directs national and world history to some degree. So your question is appropriate, is why is there a fuss over George Bush's religious mm-hmm. rhetoric? Mm-hmm. And I think there are a number of avenues that you could pursue on this question, and I'll throw out a couple. One could say that, you know, while Americans are basically comfortable with their presidents using religious imagery, some would say that here we have a president who is saying that God is directing our nation and our history, and connecting this idea with an advocacy of a policy on Iraq that is deeply divisive, even and perhaps especially within the religious community. Mm. And so it can seem to some as an attempt by the president to make the American policy he advances somehow sanctified and thus unassailable. And so I think mm-hmm. some people are responding to it in that way. Also, with regard to the war on terror, including the potential war on Iraq, I think people are acutely conscious that we want the president to do everything he can to avoid unintentionally giving the impression that this is a war between Christianity and Islam. So essentially, there's a feeling that there are some special circumstances here, and some feel that this calls for particular caution in the use of religious rhetoric by an American president mm-hmm. at this particular juncture in our history. I think there's the very certainty that some find so appealing in Bush's rhetoric generally, and his religious rhetoric specifically, is sometimes disconcerting to others who find that it lacks humility or tends to suggest too much that God's agenda perfectly coincides with Americans' political agenda, or, in other words, seems to not adequately allow for the fact that we may only imperfectly understand God's agenda at times, and inadequately to allow for the fact that God's agenda may be different than our own national policies.
So at that point, you're describing that, as I understand you, Melissa Rogers, would separate George Bush in some degree, at least from recent presidents, that degree of identification with the sacred way or God's will with American particular policy.
Well, I think a lot of presidents have had an identification of what they think what they're doing is in the main, you know, the right thing and something that they feel, even very religious presidents, I'm sure, have prayed about this and even talked about that. But I think in terms of people's reaction to it, the linking of the policy with Iraq with the idea about God directing our nation in history can sometimes seem different to people in this context.
And you follow religion and public life. How worked up do you see the religious community, the Christian community, at this point? Is there a deep division here, or is this just a squabble in the margins?
Well, I think if you're talking about the policy on the war on Iraq, of course, there are very deep divisions there.
I guess I mean something more particular than that, which would be the linkage, the presidential rhetoric, the linkage to Iraq policy. Mm-hmm. Is this developing into something that that we see sharply different views of across the Christian community at this point?
I think you do. I think you see Christian evangelicals feeling very comfortable in large measure with Bush's rhetoric on this topic. And you see mainliners and others feeling, generally speaking, feeling trepidation about it, trepidation to, you know, ranging on over to real concern. So you do see divides within the religious community over this particular issue, as well as the larger issue of Iraq.
And do you see this speaking to a rise in fundamentalism somehow globally? I mean, the first thing that Americans appeared to be confronted by was Islamic fundamentalism. Is this a Christian reply?
Well, I think whenever you raise fundamentalism, you have to ask what you're talking about, because it's kind of a term that's, you know, not all evangelicals would consider themselves fundamentalists, and so it's a little bit difficult to take it on in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would think that George Bush would call himself an evangelical, as far as I would understand that. And evangelicals in this country are sometimes very misunderstood by non-evangelicals, and sometimes, you know, there's a failure of communication mm-hmm. with non-evangelicals, and that you know could be happening in this circumstance. You know, it goes back to this point I made earlier, that I think people do feel that, you know, the other side has set up and abused religious rhetoric in an extreme way. I mean, you had Osama bin Laden talking about using religious rhetoric essentially to motivate people to commit mass slaughter of innocents.
A kind of war of terrorism.
Yeah, and just an unabashed use of religion to motivate murder of millions of innocent people. So in that context, many people are saying, let's be very, very careful about this. We do not want to make this a war between Christianity and Islam, give anyone any excuse to think that that's what this is about.
Melissa Rogers, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
Melissa Rogers is Executive Director of the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life.
We Americans have faith in ourselves, but not on ourselves alone. We do not claim to know all the ways of providence, yet we can trust in them, placing our confidence in the loving God behind all of life and all of history.
President Bush, in his State of the Union speech, we're talking tonight about the tongue of George Bush and the hand of God. Joining me now in the studio is Harvey Cox, celebrated theologian, professor at the Harvard Divinity School, and author of many books, including Fire from Heaven, The Rise of Pentecostal Spirituality and the Reshaping of Religion in the 21st Century. Good evening, and thanks for being with us, Harvey Cox.
Yeah, it's good to be here, Tom.
And joining us from Washington, John Esposito, professor of religion and international affairs and of Islamic studies at Georgetown University and director of the Center for Muslim Christian Understanding at Georgetown, author of Unholy War, Terror in the Name of Islam. Good evening and welcome, John Esposito.
Good evening. Delighted to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Harvey Cox, jump in here with us. Is something new happening here? The president's conversion story is very well known. He's very upfront about the fact that it saved him from a dissolute life. It put him back on the track. He even credits it with him coming into the presidency itself. To ordinary ears, is using a lot of rhetoric that we're not accustomed to, at least not recently. Are we crossing some kind of line here? Are we taking on a religious coloring that's new in the presidency?
Well, it's new and it's not new, Tom. I mean, I think back through American history, think back to the Civil War, for example, where both the Confederacy and the Union claimed that God was on our side and stridently made that claim and had songs and hymns that proclaimed it. And I'm afraid I sometimes contrast President Bush with Abraham Lincoln, President Lincoln, who stalwartly refused to identify the cause of the Union with the cause of God, even in the midst of a bloody and terrible domestic struggle.
Civil war.
He would not do that. There was a kind of restraint, and I think I would even say Christian humility on the part of Abraham Lincoln that we haven't witnessed recently. I think Melissa is right, however. This president today is sincere. He's had an experience on his own, of his own, which he's relying on very heavily. And I think he has been fed to some extent by the mistaken identification of the American empire, the American cause, with the Christian cause over many, many years, the land of manifest destiny and the promised land and and all of that. But I think that it has contributed to a kind of exacerbation and deepening of the conflict in ways that he might not himself even intend, and makes it very difficult for people who disagree with his policy to do so. I have to say I disagree a little bit with Melissa on the question of evangelicals. I think evangelicals, Christians in this country, are also very divided about this, about the war, about the possibility of war. They're in no sense all on the side of going to war. Many of them are very skeptical about that. I think it's one of the most divisive issues in all of the religious communities here, and for the president to appear to be therefore kind of harnessing religious rhetoric for his purpose has a further divisive effect.
I want to get into its impact on the other side of the ocean with John Esposito, but let me ask you first, Harvey Cox, if I may, give us a little bit of theological analysis here. When the president hitches God to history and history to the war, does this fall within the realm of mainstream Christian theology or not?
Well, if you think about the biblical prophets who advised and warned the kings of Israel, they always warned them about how God was working in history, not necessarily through them, but through people, through other nations who were sometimes judging Israel, judging the Jewish people, and working his purposes in ways that were not identified completely with the life of Israel. And this has always been the prophetic side of the biblical witness, is to warn those in power about identifying themselves with God.
Always a temptation when you're in
always
power.
Always a temptation.
Because God is power.
Because God is power, and if you can identify your cause with God, that empowers you even more.
John Esposito, how is this language being noted in the Middle East, and how's it going down?
I think it's being noted quite a bit. After September 11th, the initial response among many was to see this as a U.S. war against global terrorism. However, increasingly, one found in my trips all over the Middle East that people from across society began to see the American-led war as a war against Islam and the Muslim world. And I think that the rhetoric, the extent to which, on the one hand, the president quite rightly distinguishes between Islam and Muslim extremism, but the fact is he tends to frame and legitimate the administration's policies with regard to both the war against global terrorism and the impending war against Saddam Hussein.
So is it looking like a Christian crusade?
Absolutely. And what complicates it is that whether the president likes it or not, he is seen as part of the Christian right. He is associated with televangelists in the minds of many out there, you know, like Franklin Graham, who spoke at his inauguration and who has persistently referred not just to Muslim extremists as evil, but Islam is evil.
Son of Billy Graham. John Esposito, hold the thought. We're going to come back. We're talking tonight about the tongue of George Bush and the hand of God, asking whether the president's religious language is an inspiration or an offense. My guests are John Esposito and Harvey Cox here in the studio. What about you? What do you think? Does the president wield God in a way that comforts or unsettles you? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
From Boston University.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the tongue of President George Bush and the hand of God, asking whether the president's religious language is an inspiration or in some way an offense. If religion is alarming in the mouths of mullahs, is it better in the mouth of an American president? And is God on our side? Is that the right question here? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight by Harvey Cox, celebrated theologian and professor at the Harvard Divinity School, and from Washington by John Esposito, a director of the Center for Muslim Christian Understanding at Georgetown University and author of Unholy War. Let's hear a bit more from President Bush. This at a very recent February 6th National Prayer Breakfast.
We can also be confident in the ways of providence, even when they are far from our understanding. Events aren't moved by blind change and chance. Behind all of life and all of history, there is a dedication and purpose set by the hand of a just and faithful God. And that hope will never be shaken.
President Bush, February 6th at the National Prayer Breakfast. The president has been, as the country works its way through a very difficult time, making frequent, heartfelt, and clearly deeply felt religious references. They are inspiring many Americans. They are unsettling many Americans. We're asking tonight what you think of this. Is this good? Is it right? Is it helpful? Harvey Cox, if I may, I want to go to this point which comes up. It's the key repeated phrase in many of President Bush's speeches lately, and it's about God's hand moving in all of history. Mm-hmm. And you famously years ago wrote The Secular City about this at a time when the secular movement was taking precedence. People were asking, is God dead? You later said that the thesis of The Secular City was that God is the first lord of history. This means that God can be just as present in the secular as in the religious realms of life, and we unduly cramp the divine presence by confining it to some specially delineated spiritual or ecclesial sector. So, Harvey Cox, is President Bush reading Harvey Cox? Is he pulling God out of the closet here and bringing him into history, into the secular world, even the world of war?
Well, he certainly wouldn't have to be reading me to understand that God works through history to work out God's purposes in ways that we do not always know or anticipate or recognize. That's as fundamental to biblical teaching as anything at all. My problem is when he takes the next step and says, here's what God is doing, and I'm his agent, and I'm the one who's working this out for him. I think that's the fallacy that moves on. If he were to leave it at with the providence of God and trusting in the providence of God, I'm with him. I think that's language that we could all affirm. What he doesn't say is that God frequently judges the powerful, judges empires, judges the pretense and pride of the great nations. As Mary says in the Magnificat, brings the high and mighty down low and raises up those who are poor. And you don't hear that next element coming in Bush's biblical rhetoric. So I'd say he's got 50% of the message, but the other 50% is a little skewed.
And John Esposito, you know the Islamic and the Christian sides of this well. What does the Muslim ear in the current context in the Middle East hear in the specific language that President Bush uses? Is this a familiar message to an Islamic ear, something that sounds Christian, something that sounds like it could come from one or some of their own religious leaders?
Well, remember that one of the most continuing living symbols for Muslims is the Crusades. And if some think of Muslim militancy for Muslims down through the centuries, it's the Crusades. And remember that early on, President Bush misspoke. That's what we were told by using the term Crusades. The Pentagon used a phrase called infinite justice. And so what you have is many then seeing statements that the president still uses in the way he frames religion, then also identifying him with Christian right and the alliance between often the Christian right and neoconservatives, and you see columns written in Arab newspapers, and for many of us who go out there, we're constantly asked to talk about what is President Bush's relationship to that element of the Christian right represented by the Franklin Grahams and others. And so it feeds the notion that, in fact, what we could have here is the provoking of a clash of civilizations or a religious war.
And let me ask you something more specific here that I think we all really want to understand. When Muslims read this language in the current context and on alternate days, they're also reading religious messages from Saddam Hussein, reading religious messages from Osama bin Laden. Do they make a distinction, or do they say, do they make an equation saying, look, yes, they use a religious language in the service of violence. So does your president. Same, same.
I think that that's one of the risks that you run, that, in fact, you know, many will say, you know, now, obviously, extremists love this. You know, whether they're Muslim extremists or Christian extremists, because they do want a religious war and they do see a clash. But I'm talking about mainstream on both sides. For many mainstream Muslims, they'll say, well, look, you know, when you get people like Saddam and Osama bin Laden hijacking, you know, religion in order to legitimate their kinds of wars and that's seen as a threat, why is it okay when, in fact, religion is now being used to legitimate whatever America as an empire wants to do? And in particular, you see, what gives it the downside, I think where the president gets undermined by some of his own constituency, is not the president himself who distinguishes between Islam and Muslim extremists, but the extent to which the televangelists are, in fact, using the language of demonization and themselves the language of crusades. President Bush gets brushstroked by that.
Brushstroked with that broad brush. We're talking tonight about the tongue of George Bush and the hand of God. My guests are Harvey Cox and John Esposito. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. Tom's calling. Welcome, Tom. You're on the air.
Yes. One reason why I can consider this welcome tone and verbiage from the president
so
is that
you're welcoming the president's embrace of this language.
Yes.
Why, Tom?
Now, the reason is that, you know, I happen to be a born-again Christian as well, and mm-hmm. Our basic faith, if we truly practice it, not just join some kind of a wild group,
right,
is that we have to be a blessing to everybody, Jew, Christian, Buddhist, you name it, Palestinian, go through the whole scope. So by that standard, I know that Bush's heart is for really causing good for all people in the world. Mm-hmm. And the way he sees it, there is a danger that here is a person who is by most people, most wise people, judged as a maniac, someone who is uncontrollable, and has a regime that has done things that are horrible as far as humanity is concerned,
this is
about
Saddam
which,
Hussein,
by the way, the peaceniks never seem to stand up against,
mm-hmm.
that he feels that this regime has to be changed. I cannot imagine that George Bush wants fine American young people die for this. He doesn't want Germans or all the others. He would like to avoid a major massacre. Now, as we know from World War II, there were peace demonstrations, and there were powers behind Chamberlain who said, you know, Hitler can be brought under control. And I feel that the present demonstrators are not bad people. They just misinformed. And fortunately, thank God, this country has developed to trust people. I come from Europe, from Hungary, and I can read behind the lines where it is clear that you have to eliminate this. So my
Tom, we've got the perspective, and I want to thank you for bringing it to us. And I want to welcome into our conversation now Dr. Richard Land, joining us from Nashville, Tennessee. He's president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, appointed by President Bush to the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. He's host of the nationally syndicated radio program for Faith and Family. Good evening and welcome, Richard Land.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. I think you've heard a bit of this conversation, debate and
I've
opinion
heard
we've got here. Great. How do you, and you've heard our caller just now saying he welcomes President mm-hmm. Bush's message, his religious references, his faith in God, and putting that front and center as the country makes its way through a difficult time. Is there such a thing as taking that too far, Richard Land, either theologically or in its potential effect or kickback from the Islamic world?
Well, first of all, we're not responsible for how the Islamic world responds.
Family of man and all that?
That's their problem. Our problem is whether what the president means and how the president relates to the American people. And I couldn't have a more different interpretation than Harvey Cox and John Esposito of what the president is saying. I find what the president is saying to be very, very similar to what Abraham Lincoln said in his second inaugural address when he said, "With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right, as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in." Mm. And Lincoln said, you know, when one of his cabinet members said, "Well, surely God's on our side," Lincoln said, "Well, I'm more concerned that we're on God's side." And I think that is the president's focus. I think that's the focus of most of the evangelicals who support him. You know, when he says the liberty we prize is not America's gift to the world, it is God's gift to humanity, he's paraphrasing the Declaration of Independence, which says that we believe that all men are endowed by their Creator with unalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, it is a deeply held American belief that every human being has the right to life and liberty.
Does that make Washington then the agent of God to go out and secure that freedom for all God's children?
Well, I think that is a theme, as Harvey Cox knows, that goes all throughout American history, starting with the Puritans who came to be a city on a hill and was secularized into the War to End All Wars by Woodrow Wilson and the Arsenal for Democracy and the Four Freedoms of Franklin Roosevelt and John F. Kennedy's inaugural address, which said, "We'll go anywhere, bear any price, pay any burden, oppose any foe, support any friend in defense of liberty, and ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." All George Bush is doing is going back to an older tie-in between faith in God and that understanding of a particular gift and a particular burden that many Americans, and I would include myself among them, believe that we have. We're not just a country. We're a cause. And that cause is to help people around the world have freedom. And I think one of the most important speeches the president made was the one he made at the American Enterprise Institute last week, in which he made it clear that we're not going to go in and try to dictate to Iraq what kind of country they can have. If they want to have a country that gives has a special relationship with Islam and gives favor to Islam and calls itself an Islamic country, that's fine.
Richard, let me ask you something. We've got that speech. We've talked about it on this show. But I'm reading here from a column by Fritz Rich. He's a Presbyterian minister from Bethesda in the Washington Post.
I've read the column. It's a terrible column.
Well, I just want to get your response to it. He talks about the myth of redemptive violence. He says that he's basically saying in the Bush-style view of the world, war is essential. For God to win, evil needs to be defined and destroyed by God's faithful followers. He says, "Christians have held this view to be heretical since at least the 3rd century. It is the bread and butter theology of fundamentalists, whether Muslim, Jewish, or Christian." He says this is a view that sees war as a kind of redemptive purgative. Is that what the president is bandying about?
Of course not. And it's an absurd column, and that's one of the more absurd statements in the absurd column. That's holy war. That's jihad. It's the other side that has jihad. We have just war theory, and just war theory rejects redemptive violence. Just war theory says it has to be a last resort, that every other means needs to be tried first. You cannot try to annihilate your enemy. That's beyond the prerogative of just war. You must have non-combatant immunity. You must have limited goals, and you must seek to act redemptively. All of those things are totally at odds with the assertions that are made in that column, and George W. Bush's policies are well within the confines of just war. And, you know, the statement was made earlier that Christians in this country are deeply divided on this issue. Well, I guess that depends on how you define deeply divided. Among Catholics, according to the Wall Street Journal, it's about 50-50. Among Protestants as a whole, it's 2-1 in favor of Bush, and it's much more than 2-1 among evangelical Christians.
I guess that still sounds potentially like a division.
They got to be coming from somewhere, because about 65% of Americans support the president's policies.
Richard Land, stand by. John Esposito, I hear you there in Washington.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we need to note is that my understanding of America in terms of separation of church and state means that no religion is privileged and certainly no particular form of Christianity. But with regard to the last comment made, one has to look at the statements that have been made by leaders of major churches with regard to Mr. Bush's initiative regarding Iraq. And there you've got the National Conference of Catholic Bishops, you've got the Pope, you've got the National, you've got the NCC, the WCC, all coming down and raising serious questions about the Bush administration's desire for a military attack at this time against Iraq.
So it sounds like a division. John Esposito, Richard Lamb, please tell me. I want to turn to Harvey Cox. Harvey, jump in here. What about war as a redemptive purgative? Is it an absurd notion? Richard Lamb says we're not doing holy war. It's the other side that's engaged in holy war. Help us with the theology from your perspective.
Let me agree with one thing that Richard Lamb said, at least. I do believe that the president wants to do good. I wouldn't say anything, but certainly the statistics that Richard Land just quoted sounds like a very divided country to me, 50-50 or 65-35 or whatever, with the National Council of Churches and the Catholic bishops and the Pope all opposing the war at this point. Now, the question, I think, is how do we do this good? This is the discussion. How do we become agents of good in the world? I'm for that. Mm-hmm. I agree with Richard Land on that. Mm-hmm. I think the debate that's going on in this country is, do we now go to war with Iraq to do that?
Well,
We seem to be planning to. And what I'm suggesting is the kind of rhetoric the president is using, although I believe he's sincere about it, is dousing that needed discussion. As citizens of a democracy, we really have to discuss this reasonably, openly, relying on our religious traditions, and then come to a decision. And I think what he's doing is rushing us.
Richard Land?
With this rhetoric.
Well, number one, I think, first of all, I have to respond to what John Esposito said. Nothing George Bush is doing is violating separation of church and state. The American people knew that George Bush was an evangelical Christian. He said that Jesus was the most important political philosopher in his life because he changed his life. They knew
that.
Does
knowing
that
mean that there can then be no violation of church and state boundaries?
No, there can be.
Forewarned is forearmed?
No, there can be. And I've had very grave reservations about many of the first proposals on faith-based initiatives for that very reason. But for the president to mean, this is no more a violation of separation of church and state than it was for Franklin Roosevelt and his daughter to write a prayer, which they read to the American people when he announced the D-Day invasion. I mean, this is just absurd to say this. Now, when it comes to division, it's true that many of the religious leaders in this country oppose the president, but clearly many of their followers don't. I mean, I can think of two very prominent Methodists who disagree with the Methodist Church.
You just
George
quoted 50-50 among Catholics, Mr. Land.
Yeah. Well,
doesn't that sound pretty divided to you?
Well, among Catholics it is, but among Protestants it's 2-1 in favor, and in the country at large it's 2-1.
We've got a debate going right here. We've got to take a break. Richard Land, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Grateful to have you on. Dr. Richard Land is president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. We're talking tonight about the tongue of George Bush and the hand of God, asking whether the president's religious language is an inspiration or an offense. Is God on our side? Is that the right question? Is it reassuring to have a leader who puts his spiritual cards on the table? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the tongue of George Bush and the hand of God, asking whether the president's religious language is an inspiration or an offense. What do you think? Is President Bush breaking with the secular tradition of the American presidency? Will God march with American troops in Iraq? Does that mean this is a crusade? Is this religious piety or American triumphalism? And I guess for God to win, must America make war on evil? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. My guest tonight in the studio, celebrated theologian and Harvard Divinity School professor Harvey Cox, and with us from Washington, D.C. tonight, John Esposito, director of the Center for Muslim Christian Understanding at Georgetown University. Victor's joining us on the line. Welcome, Victor. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The more I think about this conversation, President Bush using God in our side and let's bomb those people, it looks like our foreign policy has been robbed out of the Inquisition book. At one time, the Pope had, for centuries, had armies working for him, going all over the world, and we had to convert these people into Christianity or we'll burn them in a stake. And the guys who killed them will be happy at night, said, hey, I just saved a soul. I killed a guy, but I saved the soul.
But Victor, we're talking here about, on the one hand, terrorists who have murdered many innocent people, and on the other hand, a tyrant who feeds his people into wood chippers.
Well, I guess people never failed to have reasons to attack other people. The colonial powers in the past had reasons to attack the savages and kill them.
But so is there no reason, is there no offense that would muster a righteous indignation in your book?
Excuse me?
Is there no offense, then, that would muster a righteous indignation in your book that might take a leader to say, by God, we have to do something about this?
Well, I would have been more a believer of this policy if our foreign policy had been systematically in the past always correct. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, we were friends with Saddam Hussein. We gave him anthrax, which they called was reproducible grade anthrax, so he could use on the Iranians. That's what I read.
Yeah, we don't come with a lily-white history. Victor, thank you for your call. Harvey Cox, take us in here again. Let me give you another observation from, this is Reverend Fritz Risch, pastor of the Bethesda Presbyterian Church. Dr. Richard Land doesn't like him, but hey. He says, Bush's religious supporters are his greatest cheerleaders. Rather than his spiritual guides, they're his faithful disciples. He's the leader of the America they think God has ordained. Then he says, contrary to popular opinion, the religion that this group espouses is triumphalism, not Christianity. This is a zealous form of nationalism baptized with Christian language.
It's always dangerous, Tom, when you mix the cross with the flag. It's always a volatile mixture when religion and nationalism get poured into the same pot. And that's exactly what is happening here. What it does is to make it very difficult both to be a patriotic American and a Christian, which I am, by the way, mm-hmm. both, mm-hmm. and to be critical of a particular policy. This is what we need to have more serious discussion about this policy. There are many people who disagree with it on religious grounds. We've just heard that the entire National Council of Churches, the Catholic bishops, the Pope, I made a list here of their Pentecostal Peace Fellowship, Evangelicals for Peace. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who want us to slow down and say, how do we deal with this admittedly evil person?
At the same time, Richard Land represents a different group, and it is large, and it says, let's go. We support this president. We like this language. We want to be wrapped in this flag of God.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't think he actually said that. I think he's a firm supporter of the president, which he has a right to be. However, he has to be very careful, I think, and those who support him, that they don't crowd out using religious rhetoric and God language. Don't crowd out people who are faithful to their religious convictions, also patriotic Americans, and want us to work multilaterally. I mean, that hasn't come up yet. We do belong to an international organization called the UN, and we've tried to work through it, but we keep getting these hints that if they don't go along, we're going to do this all by ourselves.
More than hints, I'd say.
I think more than hints.
I guess, though, speaking of crowding out, it leaves me wondering, you know, this notion of purgative war. I mean, mm-hmm. George Bush is also very big on good and evil. Now, when we saw what happened on September 11th, it looked pretty darn bad. If you had to picture mm-hmm. evil, that looked like evil. Saddam Hussein has got a track record that brings evil to mind, even if you're not a terribly religious person. On the other hand, there is the idea, again, I'm referencing Fritz Risch here, but that in the Christian, Judeo-Christian worldview, good and evil are critical, but not, they don't have the right of primacy here, that redemption comes first. And that starts from this assumption that all humanity is flawed, that no person is totally good, no person irredeemable. God's purpose is to redeem all people. Where does that leave us?
Yeah, exactly. And remember early on, and still occasionally now, President Bush talks about a war against evil. We're in a war against evil. Mm-hmm. Now, evil has been around for a very long time. And it's a clear teaching of Judaism and Christianity that evil is not always just out there. Evil is a part of each of us. We confess our sins on a regular basis. We are part of the problem as well as part of the solution. And when you make us all part of the solution, all them out there part of the problem, I think you do a grave injustice to the biblical idea.
John Esposito, are we at risk of that? Are we in range of that? Or is the president still, in your view, within the American tradition of leadership, calling on the deep cultural wells that we find in Scripture?
I think the president was clearly elected by those that elected him because of his skills to lead us politically as president. People did not, most Americans who voted for him, did not vote for him on the basis of his faith and his particular interpretation within his faith. And I think that's what gets tricky. I think that in terms of the way in which we project ourselves, look, let me also say, I believe George Bush is very sincere. I applauded from the very beginning his distinction between Islam and Muslim extremism. But regrettably, his rhetoric and some of his policies wind up, in fact, playing into the notion that at the end of the day, this begins to look like a religious war in which somehow America, if not the president, is seen as an empire that is an agent of God. And the problem with that is, where does this stop? It began with Osama and al-Qaeda. Then it was Afghanistan. Now it's Iraq. Some of those who have been pushing the president along these lines now say that after this, one should be looking at Iran and Syria. And I think that this then puts us in a risky situation of not only looking imperial, but as if we're somehow an Christian imperial power. And that plays right to the extremists, both in the Muslim world as well as within our own society.
So where are we right now? I mean, the shooting war in Iraq at least hasn't started. Are we, though, in the minds of the Islamic world already in a religious war, or are we just tempting that view?
I think that many in the Muslim world don't see us as, that is, us in a religious war, but they do see an administration whose pursuit of the war no longer seems to be simply a pursuit of a war against global terrorism, but rather one that seems to be a war that targets in particular Islam and the Muslim world. And so, for example, many say if Saddam is most can't stand Saddam, but they say if we're talking about imminent threats, then why Saddam right now and not North Korea?
Nathaniel's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Nathaniel. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to respond to Professor Cox's biblical context he provided earlier.
All right.
He stated earlier that the prophets were there to warn those in power with identifying with God. I think that's only one of the many contexts that could be derived, especially from the Old Testament, including, you know, Joshua, Jericho, and David slaying the 10,000. Because there are a lot of contexts or interpretations that the Bible can have. You know, the idea of the just war versus jihad. I mean, there are places in the Old Testament where God calls for the annihilation of a people, destroying the enemies, not just them, but everything that was with them, all their possessions, things like that. So I think it's a matter of personal moral convictions that you have as a Christian, rather than taking directly from the Bible, because the Bible has justified a lot of things in the past.
Harvey Cox?
Indeed, the Bible has justified a lot of things in the past. I often wonder, though, when President Bush says that his favorite philosopher is Jesus, whether recently he's read, for example, the Sermon on the Mount, or he who takes the sword shall perish by the sword. There's no suggestion of what this recent caller just was talking about in the teachings of Jesus himself. None, whatever. He was for speaking truth to power. Now, we've evolved over many years a recognition that there are circumstances in which one does have to use an appropriate amount of force, proportionate force against evil. Whether we're in such a situation now, in a just war situation, I want to repeat, is exactly the question we should be struggling with. And when you escalate that discussion or when you short-circuit it with the language of crusade, which the president himself has used, or war against evil, that means we can't have that discussion, and we're deprived of our rights as citizens. And,
or you introduce notions of preemptive strike.
Yeah, right. That's certainly not part of just war.
Well, I guess this administration has itself moved past the just war debate. Richard Land, closely associated with the president, called his office, and they refer to it as the just war. The just war is coming. The just war is imminent. Nathaniel, thanks for your call. Steve's calling from Tingsboro, Massachusetts. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
quickly, when you look at the United States in terms of its technological and economic success, it ranks right up at the top with countries like Germany, Japan, and Great Britain. When you look at the United States in terms of prevalence of religious belief, it also ranks up at the top.
What do you take away from that, Steve?
Well, the countries we share at the top of that particular ranking are countries like Colombia, Mexico, Indonesia, Nigeria, and Afghanistan.
What's wrong with that? They're all God's people?
Well, that presumes the existence of a God.
Well, I mean, okay.
My second point is...
for purposes of this conversation.
I want to go back to the George Bush saying that Jesus was his favorite political philosopher.
Yes.
To me, at worst, that shows a misunderstanding of the word philosopher. At best, it shows a willingness to pander to the more base instincts of the electorate.
Well, what about a man who was saved from a life of drink and disrepair by religion? Can't you credit him that?
No, I can't, because you know you can say whatever happens in your mind is justification enough for saying that God did it.
Yeah, okay, we've got your vantage, which is maybe the whole conversation is not where you want to live, Stephen. We've got that. Harvey Cox, let me turn to you. We just heard about a reference to Germany. Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote about a joyous secularism. He foresaw it in his own country. Of course, he ended up martyred by the Nazis. But he worried about Christians who view the role of government as helping God to establish the kingdom of God on earth. He viewed this as human arrogance and a denial of God's sovereignty. Do we toy with that here? Or is this just what a leader has to do to rally the troops to get to get justice done?
I hope not. And speaking of Germany, during World War I, the slogan of the German Empire was Gott mit uns, God is on our side. Mm-hmm. Adolf Hitler, time after time, referred to himself as an instrument of providence leading his people. That kind of language, whether you're wrapping it's the German flag or whatever flag you're wrapping with the cross, always creates enormous problems and difficulty and violence. By the way, with the last caller, I don't have any problem with George Bush saying Jesus is his favorite philosopher. Mm-hmm. That's fine with me. I just wish he'd read his favorite philosopher a little more thoroughly and see what he can garner from that philosopher in this particular instance. We don't hear much about that now. The religious rhetoric he's using has said nothing about the teachings of Jesus on this subject.
But it's that special kind of conservatism, that compassionate conservatism.
Well, yes, but he's not. When he talks about the purpose of God working itself out, and we're here, and we're its instruments, and that kind of talk, I wish he would go back and read the Gospels.
John Esposito, take us to the Muslim world one more time. Is Christianity there recognized today as that religion of grace, of hope, of redemption?
I think in the current context, regrettably, most people are not thinking about, as it were, theological issues, but the relationship of theology to politics right now. And, you know, certainly while one can talk about the fact that, mainstream Muslims recognize the linkage to Christianity and Judaism in terms of being children of Abraham, etc., what most people are doing in the Muslim world now are exactly what most people in the rest of the world are doing, and that is they are riveted on this potential war with Iraq and what its implications are. And the fact is, we've been talking along one track, but we ought to introduce the fact that if you look at surveys outside of the Muslim world, surveys in Europe and other parts of the world, you see grave concerns. You see similar levels of anti-Americanism, but also grave concerns in Europe about the extent to which the president uses religion.
And with that, we're going to have to introduce and run from it. Our time is finished. But John Esposito, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
John Esposito is director of the Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding at Georgetown. He's author of Unholy War, Terror in the Name of Islam. And Harvey Cox, just great to have you. Thank you so much for coming tonight. Please come back.
Thanks.
Harvey Cox is professor at the Harvard Divinity School, author most recently of Common Prayers, Faith, Family, and a Christian's Journey Through the Jewish Year. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR.